Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, set your sleep timers, pack your playlists, because it's time to put the IE in eye mask. It's time for Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. And one way to help out the show is I'm always looking for listeners to join in my Don Quixotean missions. And the current mission is to just get Trader Joe's to sponsor podcasts, even though they don't do any marketing. You know, go in, email, and say, hey, why don't you sponsor some podcasts? Podcasts and Trader Joe's go together like those freaking cookies with the cookie butter in the middle. It goes together like Tubac and Chuck go together. Even though the price doesn't currently reflect it, we give you, you know, we say, hey, don't bother us. So sponsor some podcasts. Right, Jonathan?
We go to Trader Joe about once a month. Strange and cheap, we fill our cabinets and I'm pumped. Ooh, 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 ooh. We listen to podcasts all day long. If you love Trader Joe's, please send them this song. Trader Joe's, Trader Joe's, hey Trader Joe's, podcast, podcast, come be our friend, Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's, we're looking for you. Podcasts, podcasts, because you are cool.
And thank you, Mystery Bard. Yeah, Trader Joe's, think about sponsoring some podcasts. Also, if anyone knows anyone at HBO, I'm trying to get a hold of someone there. Not a general, so I could see if I could get on the Game of Thrones media list or whatever. So ideally, I could have a crack at those episodes to get a head start, but... I don't know. If anybody does know anybody at HBO, that'd be huge. And we're always looking for sponsors at sleepwithmepodcast.com/patron. Just $1 a month I need. Ideally, we're trying to get to 1,000, but let's right now try to get to 750 in the next day or two. If you give value out of the show, use it to fall asleep, and you can spare $1 or more. But if you can spare $1, just $1. And eventually we could get 10% of the audience on board at $1. It'll keep the show sustainable, I think. So please, if the show puts you to sleep and you rely on it, you know, I'm going to rely on you for $1 a month. Thanks. And let's get on to the show. Hey, are you up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble falling asleep? Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that's here to put you to sleep. We do with a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. I'm going to do the rest. And what I'm going to do is, with my hand, I'm making the motion of smoothing out a safe place in the deep, dark night. And that's what I'm sending my voice across. The old deep, dark night. I'm getting to carve out a little safe place for us here where you can set aside whatever's keeping you up, whether it's thoughts, physical feelings, emotions, noises, whatever it is. I'm going to try to distract you from that. I'm going to use lulling, soothing tones, pointless meanders, pregnant pauses. Well, just pauses, actually. Pregnant pauses symbolizes, you know, pregnant with lulls, pregnant with dulls. So I guess they are pregnant. Pauses. Alliteration, or I may misuse alliteration, the word alliteration. Alliterative idiocy. Oh no, that was illustrative idiocy. I think that was on the one school I tried to go to where they said, okay, you could do your own report card. And kids, just in case you are listening, normally I tell you not to listen to old scoots. But let me just, you know, occasionally I don't want to be the adult figure to crush any delusions you have, because delusions are part of what makes us human. Or illusions. But every time, you know, I'll pull you aside and I say, hey, let me tell you something. Anytime they say you get to do your own grades or report card, they're not being fully honest with you, I'll tell you for sure. Anytime they say, yeah, just do your, at least, especially, just trust me on that one. There's probably, there's some other agenda at work. But if you go into it with an awareness instead of a resistance, kids, and, you know, maybe ask your parents what those words mean and then get back to me if you can give it to me kid to kid. But if you can take an inquiry and an acceptance, you might be able to learn something about the adult condition. But yeah, what do they say? Illustrative idiocy or something. Because it was a trick. They said, why don't you write up your own report card? And I said an ode to Andrew in report card form, acing at school. Is how he performs, you know, and then went on like that. You know me and odes. And I can hear, actual people that know things about odes, they can feel your teeth grinding, and it's fine. I'm an amateur odist. Okay. Again, I think I'm going to this well too many times, but I keep getting these book titles down. I'm going to have to think of something, you know, I guess I could just use it as chapters in my... Oh, geez, I already forgot it, though. Amateur Otist. You know, there was a Miss Otis that lived down the street from me. This is O-D-E. She was O-T-I-S. So I don't know if we'll get to Miss Otis. If we can get back there. But just in case, kids, you know, before I totally lose track of what I was talking about. Well, yeah, another thing to learn from me. Don't do odes as report cards. And even in believe it or not, kids, they won't believe you and say, well, I wasn't trying to be funny. I just thought that would be a nice way to do the report card. And I that's how I'd like to receive my report cards at this school. You know, in ode form. You know, iambic pentameter preferably. And then they said, of course, this was one of those ones with more than one authority figure. So they said, could you use an example of that? And I said, suede shoes. And an authority figure who glares, asking what iambic pentameter, if I dare, to explain what it is, it would be to use A, B, A, A, and add some C's and D's, is what I would start to say, if I want to dignify that question with an answer. And that ended the great school where you get to write your own report card right there, because that was actually the dean. And he was an amateur iambic pentameterist. Or maybe just, you know, maybe that's a little harsh for me to say. Maybe he was a budding poet. Let's just put it there. And I think I'm being a little bit illustrative of the idiocy that goes on at bedtime, to use a semi-harsh term, because I guess I'm dropping some harshness on the authority figures. And this podcast is to kind of distract you from the bedtime authority figures that are going to crop up at bedtime when you're trying to pull up the covers under your chin and get comfortable, leave the future for the future, put the day behind you, and then all of a sudden, you know, they want to have a conference with you, or they want to say, well, they're like, well, why aren't you being the authority figure here? Why can't you take control? You know, why don't you take control of our bedtime? And all these things. Now, old Scoots comes in. And I guess that maybe that would be what I would do as an adult. Let's do a little role play. Not that kind of role play, everybody, okay? Whoa, this is one of the few intros that would be confusing to children in a way that's not, you know, well, I guess I still get some glares from some adults. But, you know, I'll scoop in as scoop in. I won't scoop in. I guess I will scoop it, you know. Scoop myself out of a cloud, and I'll plop right into your bed zone. And that means I won't be in your bed, you know, because I don't want to track any dust or anything in there. But I'll be in your bed zone area, and I'll try to distract, just like if that little Andy, the little Andrew was sitting there at his report card conference. A new imaginary school, the new imaginary institute of attempting to educate Andrew. And he's in some sort of battle of wills. And, you know, poor kids, sometimes they don't even know. And I guess adults don't know either. I mean, that's what makes some of the drama so good that we see, or the comedy. And I guess maybe no one in the room knows they're locked in a battle of wills. They think they're, you know, doing what they're supposed to. Or, you know, maybe little Andrew's just confused with his ode. And then I guess we could classify it as an attack on iambic, you know, the dean's love. Well, the dean just asked a question. I mean, let's not take sides. Let's take all sides. You know, let's like a bully base of compassion and empathy here. Poor dean just has a love of iambic pentameter and just says, geez, well, do you appreciate it? Maybe he was just saying, hey, do you appreciate it as much as I do? But the dean didn't know he's up against a boy who, you know, views authorities as brick walls. And the boy didn't know that the brick wall he was viewing as an authority was really just a, you know, maybe we could go in and say, hey, Dean, why don't you drop a little ode about, you know, I can't, you know, you're imaginary. So I can't actually fill you in on the, you know, that your imaginary character knows so much about iambic pentameter. So this will be tricky. Are you with me, imaginary Dean that loves iambic pentameter? Oh, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. Okay, well, are you still with... Okay, but we're on the same side. Okay. Oh, Andrew. Oh, A. Oh, B. Oh, A. Iambic pentameter is so much more than that, I say. And I see in your eyes a budding good fool who just needs to be encouraged for the iambic pool. To take a swim, to take a leap, to feel the joy of the beat. One day I'll understand, and one day you'll know. A life without iambic pentameter is one filled with woe. Hey, great job, Dean. I am afraid to ask if that was iambic pentameter, so I'm just going to say this is a compassion, empathy bouillabaisse, so you're totally off the hook. Great job. And who are these other two lovely adults in this meeting? He was supposed to write his own report card, huh? And he decided to write a note about himself. Let me guess. Little Andy, he views himself through the lens of imaginary realism. Do you understand what that is? No, because he's an odd chap. So he was kind of being truthful in this tall tale he wrote as an ode about his adventures at this school thus far. Part of him wishes it was true, and part of him actually thinks it's true. And, you know, I'm not here to judge any authority figures that decide to say, hey, write your own grades here, and just leave it sounding like it's open-ended when it's closed. You know, you're trying to teach these kids a little bit different, huh? And you probably don't get the credit you deserve. Or the funding. Oh, you got plenty of funding. Yeah, no wonder. This place is the cleanest imaginary school I've ever seen. I like all the polished, what is that, chrome or sparkling silver? Neither. Is it neither or neither? Both. Both what? Okay, I probably shouldn't be doing that kind of material right now. I just want to say, maybe do two. What about this next semester? Do two report cards. How about a report card report? We had that on episode, but why don't the students do a report card report before they get their report card? You know, and they could do it however they open. They could be open at weather report, a diary entry, newspaper article, a news report. That's what I did, but little Andy did an ode. Oh, to worry of my report card coming in. The fear inside, it feels like I don't want to use the word sin or gin. So then, to the report card I await. So there, you could fill the rest in, little Andy. And then the kids could get the report card. You could still do the report card part. And then you could do a post, you know, report card report reporting after the report card. And then you could have a meeting about all that. That would give you the kind of expectations. How about, what does everyone think about that? Iambic pentameter? Yeah, great. Okay, excuse me. I have to call this conference to a close and without an ode because I'm over time here. So, hey, everybody, I'm back. That's kind of how the podcast works in a very metaphorical way. I try to do that same thing for your brain, for all the parts of your brain that are keeping you up at night. Say, hey, let's not judge here. Let's not fight. Let's not be, you know, we don't want a battle of wills. Because really, we all want to get a good night's sleep. Or at least have a chance, or at least sink into our bed and have a little relaxation. And I'm just here to provide the distraction part. So maybe during that whole, whatever happened, over-oding, we'll say that ode overload, you maybe thought a little bit less about everything else that was going on. And that's the point. Maybe you fell asleep, maybe you didn't. Hopefully you're drifting off. The podcast's a little bit silly, a little bit senseless, a little bit odd, but well-intentioned. I'm here coming across the deep, dark night to try to escort you over the threshold from wake to sleep. If this is your first time, a few times here, I hope it works for you. Give it a few tries. And that's it. You know, thanks for stopping by. I really hope, I really yearn I can help you fall asleep. All right, housekeeping. We're on the web, www.sleepwithmepodcast.com. Older episodes are there. You can comment on the website. You can email me feedback at sleepwithmepodcast.com. Get me on Twitter at Dearest Scooter, on Facebook at sleepwithmepodcast. One of the Chris Posty Posterson from Sounds Like an Earful podcast, who does some of our music and edits some of the episodes. I want to thank Scotty and Jennifer on our artwork, on our honor. We have a Facebook group over at sleepwithmepodcast.com/nods, where listeners can kind of get to know each other and talk about friendship and sleep stuff and, you know, just other people that listen to the podcast. I want to thank Julie C., Jennifer B., Lie to Lie, Rachel L to the G, Alexandra and Laura, who moderate over there. I want to thank Latitude, who moderates our subreddit. And that's it. Let's get on to the show. Hey, everybody. It's a trending Twitter Tuesday here. It's, I don't know what the date is. It's 5:32-ish by the time I get this thing. 15th, February 15th. And I'm going to take some screenshots, maybe, if I can figure out how to... But I was thinking, I was doing that opening, I thought about Mrs. Otis, or Miss Otis, I don't know. Oh, you know what we could do? I just thought of an idea, because I was thinking about Miss Otis, and I was thinking about the neighborhood I grew up in, and it just hit me. I said, geez, you know, I used to, now this will be dated a little bit for some of you. But I delivered newspapers. That was, my first paid job. And so I was like, huh, I think Mrs. Otis got a paper. Miss Otis, I'd probably be sued. So it's Otis, you know. But I don't, I guess I can't be sued for saying that I delivered a paper, maybe, to her house. Might cover some other stuff that'll get me sued, believe me. But yeah, I guess there's no reason to sue me. But so let me try to explain this newspaper thing to people. And actually, because of my kind of general... So once upon a time, just in case there's any young kids listening, it starts with the Gutenbergs, and then at some point they invented this thing that could make a mass publishing or something. You could print stuff. Are you with me so far? No. Kind of like a printer. At some point they said, hey, let's put the news on this paper. We'll put it on some less expensive paper. And then every day or a few times a day, that'd be a good way to disseminate the news or distribute the news. So they had these things called newspapers. I don't know if it was for hundreds of years or thousands of years, but a long time. And even into recent history, people would get these newspapers to their house. Now, I think now, I don't know, it's been a while since I've gotten a newspaper because we could cover that. That's a whole other ball game, but... And in the I guess I was a young lad. I guess while the things were still going well, I was like the pre. I think at some time during my youth, we had a morning paper and an afternoon paper. So there was so much news in Syracuse, New York, and so much demand for it. And I think I don't know if at the time they were owned by the same company. Or two different companies when I was real little. It'd be pretty cool if they were both independent. And I don't know, for some reason, I think they were. And then there was a Sunday paper, I think, that they put out together or a different company. Again, if I get, but so there was a morning paper that was the Post Standard. And I think the afternoon paper was the Herald Journal. This is in Syracuse, New York. So two newspapers. Most people just subscribe to one or the other, you know, unless you're a real newser. But you either distributed one paper or the other. You didn't usually distribute both anyway. But they would get delivered to your home by a newspaper person. It could be an adult, could be a kid. It was a nice way for kids to make money. Though I'm sure, like, it was a way for some people made their entire living at it, or they managed the paper boys and girls. But a lot of the people that delivered the paper were young, grammar school, late grammar school age kids. Let's see. So you get the news. Let me see if I can get this newspaper thing explained first. So the newspaper would come to your house and you would read it. And I always associate reading the paper with the morning and drinking coffee. But I guess my dad probably get home from work and read the paper. I can't really picture it in my mind, but I think we were afternoon paper family. I think the operation of getting to work and getting six kids off to school, it probably didn't leave a lot of time for reading the paper in the morning or drinking coffee or maintaining very much sanity. So probably not. But you would read the paper. The paper would have like the front page would have all the news. There's still newspapers, you know. I'm sure people know, but it had the major breaking news. And before the internet, you know, this is a great point of pride and employment and dissemination and of knowledge and learning about stuff, because you couldn't just read articles on the internet. And of course, that led to, you know, I don't want to discuss the economics or, because, you know, I'm not that bright, and I don't, my mind doesn't hold on to that stuff of when, you know, the advertising and the cost of distributing the papers and stuff. And I can tell you, I do miss reading the paper. I probably had a good stretch of, I don't know how many years, where I could get up and I could drink coffee and read the paper, for the most part, cover to cover. It was the San Francisco Chronicle was one, which is still around. And for even a while, as an adult, San Francisco had a Chronicle and the Examiner. And I think the Examiner maybe shut down or was purchased, and then it became a free tabloid paper. The San Francisco Chronicle was the morning paper. I don't know if the Examiner was an afternoon paper or not. But that was something I enjoyed, drinking the coffee, reading the articles, and working my way through the paper. And I don't know how long that took. Probably decent for my brain. Probably not for good, because, you know, usually I'd have some knee-jerky reactions. And I always like to follow, like, stuff about urban design and building and building projects. And that was cool. But there was a lot to enjoy about reading the paper. So that was a newspaper. Now, so in Syracuse, New York, we had the two papers, and at some point I was the oldest kid, so I was a lot of experimenting. But my mom was also the oldest, so I'm sure that some of her siblings had a paper out, because she grew up in Syracuse too. And for a lot of kids, this was like a rite of passage, your first job. And I remember the kid that delivered it, our newspaper, I think he was the youngest. I think he had had a couple older siblings, and he was a few years older than me. His name was Mark. Mark M. And he did the paper route, and at some point it was like, who's going to get Mark's paper route? And I don't know if any money, I don't know how any of the economics worked. It was not my strong suit. But at some point it was like, oh, do you want to take over Mark's paper route? And I said, it seemed like it just kind of happened. I don't think I was like, maybe my friends had started to get in paper out, so I was on it. But I knew, and I know most of my friends did have paper delivery jobs. Now, a couple of them had the morning and the afternoon paper route, which would be brutal, especially in the morning one, because you got to get up so early to deliver those papers because people want to wake up and have their paper. And then you got to be ready to go to school. So that was definitely out because I'm, you know, there was no way I was getting up for that. It barely, you know how it is with me. At some point it became, Mark was like, hey, you could do my paper. And I think he rode a bike and delivered the paper. I could never get that down. It always went disastrous for me. Well, like, you get a bag, you've seen Newsies. It wasn't like that, except for the bags the kids had that carried the papers in. And I was a kind of a scrawny, tiny kid. Actually, so was Mark. Ended up, I think he, maybe we were in high school at the same time, or maybe. But he was kind of like the smaller kid, and he was like the strongest kid at our high school at one point, they said, on the loudspeaker. I remember hearing that, and I said, wow, Mark, that's the guy I got the paper out from. I think he could bench press the most. I don't know why they did that over the loudspeaker. Maybe it's my imagination. But congratulations, if that's true. And he was a real nice guy. So he kind of showed me the ropes. And I guess it was like a little business. Now, no one explained this to me, or probably someone tried to, but I just ignored it. So I didn't really understand the economics of the newspaper, like that you're actually running a small business. And this is a little sad because I still don't know. I'm still piecing it together. My parents probably lost a bunch of money at this deal. So maybe it was just more like to pay to keep me out of the house for a few extra hours. But I'm pretty sure you would buy the papers at a discount from a distributor who was also your boss as a paper boy. So if there's any trouble, the distributor, and the distributor was in charge of making sure the papers got out. And if you wanted more money, you needed more. You had a little route, like a little territory. So any of the houses in your territory, you could try to get them to subscribe to the paper. And you probably made a little bit of money on, you know, it's a little business. Like, I probably bet, what does the paper cost? 50 cents. Maybe I made 10 cents a paper. Maybe I made 5 cents a paper. I don't know. Maybe I made a day. Yeah, probably something like that. You know, 5 cents a day. I don't know. But you delivered it every day. And the nice thing about the afternoon paper was then you got the Sunday paper. That was where the big money was at, because some people would just get the Sunday paper only for the coupons and the comics. Let me think. I'm trying to think what other details you would need. So I had my bag for my normal thing. I think I would get home from school. I don't know if I would even go home first, but actually right by my bus stop was a stack of where the distributor would drop off a bundle of papers, and those would be my paper bundles. And actually, Bo was, for a time, my best friend. I think his papers also got dropped off there. He had a route that bumped up against mine. Pretty sure my friends Pat and Kyle both had paper routes. I think Kyle had a morning and the afternoon. Maybe Pat had a morning paper route, too. It makes me shudder to think doing the morning paper out. So every once in a while, you would help your friends out on their paper out if you were hanging out with them after school or something, which wasn't really fun, but it wasn't terrible. And you didn't really have a choice. Believe me, I don't know how many times my mom probably had to deliver my newspapers, but, you know, 100 times too many. And let me just say a few things other, you know, if there was, worst paper boys ever, I would definitely be, you know, let's not beat around the bush. I'd be on there. And I remember there was, because I didn't understand the business side. There was this time we had the paper delivery party. And I think they demeaningly called it paper boys. But at this time, it was paper men and women. I mean, adults and kids. So boys, girls, and men and women. I remember at the paper delivery party, I forget, there is actually a term for it. Paper courier? Probably not. I'll think of it. But, they gave out all these awards, and I was like, well, where the hell's my award? And now, looking back, I say, oh, well, it was probably for people that got new customers. Like, it was for people setting records for industry, you know, making more money for the distributor, distributing more papers, you know, expanding the reach. Where for me, I probably knew I was narrowing the reach. I think I did cause more than one cancellation. So I'd go to the corner, and I would get my bundle of papers, and I would put them in my paper bag. I don't know. I think you would just fold them. I don't think we used rubber bands or plastic bags unless it was rain. And in the case of rain, I don't know. I kind of, you know, those memories dissolved. But I'm pretty sure you would just fold the paper. And sometimes you might fold it as you were delivering it. Maybe you just put them flat in your bag. But as I said, I was a bit weak. So carrying a whole load of papers, like I was a little tiny kid. So I can remember not enjoying that part of it. And I didn't think I had a very big route. Now, my route was very hilly. I know, I guess I shouldn't say that. My route involved two very steep hills. It did. And, of course, this was across upstate New York year. So it went from the terrible heat and sweating and things and the cold. It's the deepest cold of winter. So that should explain why I blacked out most of it. But so you'd put them in your bag and you'd start on your route. Ideally, you know, after a while you had your route memorized. And then you had a few people that wanted a little extra service. They wanted like very specific things. And that would be how my route would start. So here I am at the bus stop. The same bus stop where I actually caught, you know, where I got into a lot of other trouble. Because I didn't realize the person that lived on the corner where the bus stop was a spy for my mom. Until just a few years ago, it came up and my mom was telling me that was her spy and how she knew everything that I was doing at the bus stop. Which I said, wow, everything? Like, it was in the stuff I did, because there was this big bush, a giant, it actually was a hedge. It was like a giant rectangular collection of bushes. You could climb in there. I was a bad kid, let's just say that. I didn't even know what I did in the bush, but if I wasn't making my sibling's life or the bus driver or car, you know, I made that trouble for everybody. I was like Dennis Menace without the charisma. So, where was I? So I'd pick up the papers, I'd first head up straight up this giant hill, Westwood Road. So I would get off City Bus 4. That was my bus, City Bus 4. And I would get off City Bus 4. And then I would go up Westwood Road. And that was the road I lived on, at the top of Westwood Road. And Westwood Road could be impassable, unscalable in the winter by cars. And it was not the kind of hill you wanted to walk up at the end of the school day or have a paper route on. But so I'd head up Westwood Road, and then I think I would start out, I think a lot of my customers were on the right side, and didn't do too well on the left side of Westwood Road, now I'm thinking about it. I think the house on the left corner probably changed hands twice. I don't know if they were a customer, but one of my first customers on the right, I think, and I'm not trying to throw anybody in the bus here, but I think they were a high-maintenance customer, and they wanted the paper placed in between their storm screen door and their front door, perfectly in there, in a bag if it was raining. It had to be in the door, not stuck in the door. And then I think I had to knock like a certain number of times after I had to put the paper in there. And, you know, I'm a bad person, so I didn't like that. I didn't like receiving orders like that, even though it's perfectly reasonable to want all those things. So I think, you know, every once in a while I would do tests to see if they were, and they were paying attention. They said, well, geez, I pay for this paper. Why can't you just deliver? Why do you have to test out stuff? And I said, well, that's just, I'm a curious child. I just need, I don't know what's wrong with me, to be honest. So, but I think they stayed a customer. That was the thing about the newspaper was it was, you know, I guess you could go to the morning paper, but if you liked the paper, you're stuck with your paper delivery person. So that was my first stop. Then the next, let's see, there's a couple houses there. So there's that house. I can almost see it as a white, I guess a one-story, small, It wasn't a ranch house, but I guess it was because it was a one story. I never went. I think I only went into the like lobby of that house. I don't know if they tipped. I don't think I was big on, you know, that was how you made your money as a paper delivery kid. But I wasn't big on, you know, I wasn't winning doing the extra service to get the tips. You know, I was more worried about building resentment, lifetime of resentments. So in that sense, I guess I won. Yeah, you know. But so there was a couple houses there in a row. I don't know. I wish I guess this is a 99% invisible, so I couldn't tell you the style of the house. But I could tell you there was a couple houses, and then the hill, like on the flat of the hill, and then the hill started to curve its upward house. And then the house before Miss Otis's house, it was one of my, now this is one of the great houses, in my opinion, that I don't know if they were a customer. I think that house changed ownership like maybe three times as a kid. But it was a tan brick house, and it was kind of offset off the road. It was on a little bit of a hill, so it had a driveway and then stairs to get to the front of the house. And it had this big picture window in front and then another window above their garage, you know, where the second floor was. I guess the garage would have been in the basement. And I don't know if it was a one- or two-story house. I think it may have been. I'm not sure. And I think for a while it was an older couple and they were a customer. But it's this tan, orangish brick house, I think. You know, in my mind it is. Now, the PA's the resistance of this house was not the house, just a house. But if you, whoa, boy. Okay, kids, definitely get off this podcast because I just realized some things. So no kids from here on out. Okay, yeah, so personal story alert, unfortunately. I guess I can't avoid it. But so a couple things about this house. A lot of things I liked about it. I liked the look of the house. Now, between Mrs. Otis's house and this house, so if we're facing this house, we'll call it Tan Brick Central. So if you're facing Tan Brick Central to your left, 90 degrees straight up would be Westwood Road. But if you were to go halfway down their driveway, you'd see kind of these, a terraced hill, grassy hill, with a row of pine trees headed towards the side of their house. Very tall pine trees. Low, like the branches went low to the ground, so you could hide out under there, hang out, or sit around or take a break on the walk up the hill from school. And so they were on this little terraced hillside. I think it was just like one roll flat, two rolls flat, three rolls flat with the pine trees. And if you followed after the pine trees, it would go along the side of Tan Brick Central House, which, of course, as an explorer, so I would have, you know, I had gone down there. Private property didn't really mean a whole lot to me, I guess. And if you went down the side of the house, you would learn that their backyard, they had this huge backyard. I mean, huge, like a football field, which was kind of out of place. I don't know, it was just strange. And I don't think I discovered it till like fourth or fifth grade, me and my friends. So we would play football back there when we were little. I got into a phase of hitting golf balls at the houses, at the people's house from their own yard. And I'm not proud of that either. I did hit the house a few times. I don't think I broke any windows. I don't know what I was thinking either. I said, hey, let's go down there and hit some golf balls. I don't play golf. But, man. But they had this huge backyard. I mean, it was at least 300 yards. And then it went into these woods that are back there. And I think the first owners of the house, they didn't really mind us violating their private property. So every once in a while, I guess maybe we won't, I don't know how much of this paper route we're going to get through. Because these woods were a place of adventure for me. And, oh boy, so we would go down, if I could talk to my brother and sister, I'd say, well, let's leave our book bags in the, under the pine trees. And let's head back down this back down. And I don't know. I don't know if I ever knew the name of the people that owned the house. I'm sure my parents did. So maybe that means they weren't a newspaper subscriber. But we would head down the side of their house and into the woods because that was a good spot to get into the woods. Now, Miss Otis that lived next door, she also had a, her backyard wasn't quite as massive, but these people paid to have their lawn groomed, even though I don't know if they, maybe they had some adult children. I don't know if they ever had children. But, I mean, you could have had a wedding back there. That's how big this yard was. No other yard like this anywhere around where I live. I mean, it's probably pretty uneven, but they had it mowed or mowed it themselves. So it wasn't overgrown. Now, Miss Otis, she had that, like, clumpy grass. Like, her backyard was barely passable. And the woods was creeping in. Where this one, you had to go all the way back to the back of their yard to get to the woods. And my house didn't have woods access. So this was like, this was the best spot to get into the woods. You know, you didn't have to climb through. Because if you went through my yard, you'd have to go through another neighbor's yard that was full of pricker bushes. Like their entire yard was 10 feet high pricker bushes. So we'd have to blaze a path and then keep the path. And then the neighbors would get mad about that. And then you'd have to go through the brambles and pricker bushes. Then you'd go through Miss Otis's backyard, and she would call and tell on you. So you had to go through her far backyard without getting seen by her, which is I think she had like 40 eyes, and I think she had guardian cats. So you'd think you'd go through and you'd try to just dodge her house, but you had to go through her backyard. And then you could get to this yard and into the woods. I think you could probably get into the woods through Miss Otis' yard, but it's pretty overgrown. Where this one, you just get to walk on their nice grass, and then usually I think there was even a path that went into the woods from their house. And these woods, because we're just like some woods that were just, I don't know who owned them. They weren't a park. They weren't that big. They were just big enough for kids, you know. I mean, just enough for me now to appreciate how lucky I was, you know, to have a little bit of woods. You know, not as good as the Goonies, but you know, the Goonies light experience. And I can remember one time, to totally go off about the paper route, but one time, it was a hot day, I remember, and at some point during the Great Woods Exploration, and I don't know if I'd seen Stand By Me, but I had gotten big into, like, one day I'm going to be, you know, like a Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer, Stand By Me-esque, you know, getting into rivers and swamps and ponds kid. And that was one of my dreams. And then there's this one really snowy, wet winter. And I spent a lot of time in those woods exploring or, you know, with friends doing, you know, hide and seek or Revolutionary War. A lot of Revolutionary War. My friends were big history buffs. Now my brother's a history teacher, so. And there was this giant old stone wall in the middle of the woods. So at some point that was built, like, back, who knows, by, you know, when those were farms or just one or two properties. And on the far side of the woods were these steep hills where the other houses were up the hill. Which were also on my paper route, but, in, you know, it didn't go through the woods. But so after this one really snowy winter, there was a pond behind this one woman's house. I don't know who the woman was. And I discovered it, and it had to be a wet winter and then a hot day. So finally, one day, I said, you know, I got to get in. And I think one or two times, me and my brother Carl did get in there, like, knee-deep. But this was like this really hot day, and we were walking home from school, me and my sister Sheila and my brother Carl. And I don't know what grades we were in. Let's say they were in third grade and I was in fifth, or second grade and fourth, or God forbid, sixth and fourth. But it was hot, and they said, oh, it's so hot. And I said, well, there's that. I said, me and Carl discovered this pond, but we should go back and go swimming in the pond. And it was not a good idea. Like, I think there was definitely barbed wire. There was like an old barbed wire fence in there or like that, you know. I remember that. None of us got cut. I mean, it was not a place any sane person would ever swim in. But I guess a kid would, you know. And it wasn't really swimmable. And I can't believe that our fear, because it wasn't like it was clear, but I guess because it wasn't always there, there was something mystical about it. You know, it was just this one winter where it was full enough to get in and swim. And it was, it had a bunch of logs in there. But I said to them, I said, let's go swim. And they said, well, in what? I said, well, we'll just go in our underwear, you know. So it's real. And I mean, this is like, it was scandalous, I guess, because my sister, she was like, okay. So I don't know if she had a t-shirt on or not, or if it was like the three of us topless in our underwear just swimming in there. Like, you know, a couple of kids, three kids covered in, and we didn't come home from school, which I don't think was a reason to panic. But we were swimming in there, and we were hooting and hollering. I mean, I remember I was having the time of my life. We were hooting and hollering. And I'm sure even my sister's was probably one of the brief times she experienced joy before, you know, snuffed out by all her brothers. And my brother Carl, and I was hoping we'd get covered in leeches. We did not have any leeches. We had a lot of leaves on us. But I guess our hooting and hollering brought the attention of whoever lived in that house. And they found it shameful that a little girl was swimming and three children were half naked in their retention pond or whatever. And I mean, this was in the woods behind their house. I'm sure the hooting and hollering, they heard it, but they had to be investigated. And I don't even remember seeing, I mean, maybe she yelled at us and I said, come in and get us, you know, I don't remember. So I think our mom showed up at some point, probably with a baby and two little kids screaming. Or maybe the woman just told on us and said, you need to go home to your mother. Or something, because it didn't go well after that. There was consequences, and we never... I think I swam in the pond again. But, my sister definitely got in the most trouble. I don't know. I mean, I guess no one could see us. We're in the pond, you know. But so that was fun. And so that was that house. So that I guess to go back to the paper route, those people were definitely not on the paper route. So if we continue back up Westwood Road, then, oh boy, I forgot about these trees. I don't think we will get to the paper route. So the other thing about these trees, like I said, it was a good place to hide your book bags if you're going to go swim in the swamp or the pond or go in the woods or just hide out or a bathroom emergency, like on the way home from school, or... if you found something in the woods of adult nature, because back before the internet, you had to find like a magazine if you wanted to see adult bodies, I guess it would be the thing, the best way I could allude to it. And I think enough comedians have done enough stuff about this that were born before the internet. But you say, geez, every once in a while, you would just find stuff like that in the woods, guys would. I don't know what the female equivalent is, but I'm not kidding. Every once in a while, you'd be in the woods with your friends, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. You'd see a magazine tucked under a rock. You'd move the rocks, and you'd say, what? Oh, holy moly. And so at some point, I think I had made a few discoveries like that, and then maybe I'd gotten some stuff from a neighbor. And I stashed it all under that tree, and I buried it with leaves and rocks. And that was a place, you know, my friends knew, that's where I kept I guess I maybe made a stop there on my paper route. Probably that's what it was. So, I mean, nothing, it's just budding sexuality, let's be honest, and curiosity. So that was another thing that went on the tree, just viewing, you know, nothing else. We were young. And I think I kept it pretty down low. I don't know if I told my brother Carl about it, because then his friends would have found out about it. But a few of my friends knew. But that was my hiding spot for that stuff. And maybe some kid, you know, passed on. But I think we definitely got busted at some point. But yeah, I can remember the smell sitting under that tree of, you know, mildewy paper and leaves and pine and stuff. The good times. And then, so then it was Mrs. Otis's house. She got the paper. I don't think she liked me because I spread a lot of rumor. You know, I was always hoping to live on a street with a witch. Unfortunately, if you're not a witch and you live on my street, or, you know, an evil person, you know, I might use my imagination to make you into that character and then believe it. So that, you know, so she didn't like me for good, because I said, well, you must be the evil witch on the street. So she got the paper. And remember, she was nice. I think she was one of those people that was had a lot of butterscotch candy. And other than that, I don't really remember much about her. My dad was friends with her, and he kept a good eye on her. But that's about all I remember about it. She had a white house. It had like a nice opening to her house, like a little triangular entrance, almost like you were going into like a steeple or a church or something. Next house after that was the Moore's house. They were probably a paper subscriber, and they were our next door neighbors, and they were good people. I always remember the Moores, and that's a whole nother tons of stories. Then was my parents' house on the corner of Westwood and some other street I can't think of right now. Alton, maybe? I don't know. And so there's my parents' house. Now, across the street, like I said, I don't think there was very many paper subscribers that stuck with me through, you know, but so then you'd get to the top of the hill, you took a left, that was like a cul-de-sac, no, not a cul-de-sac, just dead-ended. There was like one or two houses, maybe one of those houses had a paper subscription, and then there was a couple houses straight up to the top of the hill, maybe had it. Then there was a people that lived straight across the street from my parents on this other street, I think Alton, maybe, was the name of that street, but they had this beautiful house built in the hill against their own set of woods, but we won't get into those woods. They're a different beast entirely. But that guy, there was a guy, and probably a husband and wife there, and he would, and I feel terrible about this, I guess I have an amends to make, but he would prepay for the paper. I maybe even talked about this, and I think one time I tried to get him to prepay extra, because they needed the money. So I apologize for that. But he caught me. He said, no, I don't owe you that much. And then canceled the subscription. So it serves me right for being a little thief. That's one of those memories I just think is going to pull me under one day. But, you know, I guess I don't know. You live and you learn. But he was a nice man. I probably tried to pull one over on him. And he pulled one over on me. So that was his house. Then the next house after that was, I can picture it. They definitely got the paper because I can remember being in their yard a few times. I don't know what, I think because they had like these steps up and then these giant hedges. So when you went in their yard, it was a tiny yard, but you were surrounded by like 10-foot hedges on all sides. So it could be a little claustrophobic. So I can remember just doing thinking in their yard. And they were never around. I don't remember seeing a lot of those people. Then the next house was like a nice neighbor who had a couple of kids that were a few years older than me. They were real nice. They were the mom, she was always cheery. Across the street was like my aunt and uncle for a while. Before that was a guy. And then I don't really know that. And there was another house that probably did subscribe to the paper, but, you know, boring people or something. A couple more houses. Then the BB Kids house, which are kids that live in legend in my childhood. As I tried to structure my childhood like the movies that I saw. So I decided the kids that live there, I think I made up a story about them. They were the BB Kids. And what they did was they, cause trouble for littler kids via BBs. I don't think any of that was very true, though I probably told a lot of tall tales about, you know, just escaping their grasps, you know, and being taken, you know, the different, I don't know who I spun those tales to. Probably didn't go well for the BB Kids, I'll tell you that much, but they were always, you know, I don't know if they actually did cause me any trouble, but in my, you know, in the adventures, they played a major role in my childhood that didn't, you know, never existed. But in the woods, it did. Like, they would be sniping me with their BBs in the woods. And then I would have to, that's why I was so late, Mom. That's why we had to swim in the pond We're under assault from the BB kids, a flurry of a hail of BBs. And I had to save Carl and Sheila's lives, Mom. You know, you don't understand why you're crying. So that was that. So then the BB kids, a couple more houses, nothing of import. Another street with a left, another big hill. I think that street's called Rock something. No major memories on there. Nothing that's really stirring it up for me. And then you'd go right. I remember the house on the corner on the right was Brown. That person was, I think that might have been, catching the name Purdy, P-U-R-D-Y. I don't know if that was the Purdy's house. That's a good name to say. And they were really nice. Flashback. Well, let's go through the rest of the wrecks. We're almost done. Then there's a couple of really nice fancy houses on this next street, like these brick, very large houses. I think my cousin lives in one now. And they were nice. I think one of them was a dentist or orthodontist, and they got the paper. They were nice. And then there was a couple other really cool houses. Like, there was this one ultra-modern house down towards the end of my route, which kind of bended around to this other street and then ended, and someone else's territory began. But if we go back to, like, across the street from the Purdy's, to the left, like, if you were to look at the Purdy's house on the corner, you look to the left, kind of across from the BB's house, as kids, there was this strange house, and not strange in a weird, like, just like this house I really liked, and there's an older woman there that lived there for a while. She got the paper. She was very nice. She would give me treats sometimes. It wasn't a big house, and I wish I could do it justice. It was almost like it had a house with, like, a commercial element, but it didn't actually. Like, it had a circular driveway, but it didn't seem like a house that was designed for a lot of traffic. But I think it had, like, a driveway and a circular driveway, which when you're a kid, that's the kind of stuff you see in movies. So then you're like, man, there's something cool about this, that this driveway you can drive in a circle and then exit. And then I can remember, you know, I did a lot of looking in windows and testing doors and stuff. And I remember her house because she didn't live in the whole house, I don't think. It almost looked like there was a commercial kitchen on the ground floor, like probably like a bar and a commercial kitchen, and that was totally unused. And I always wanted to adventure. I don't think I ever got in that house, but I always wanted to adventure there. And then her house was also another, her house was the access point for the next set of woods. And I don't ever remember her causing any trouble, but she probably, I mean, all I'm slowly learning that all my neighbors had my mom's phone number to directly call her. I guess that was a dynamic in the neighborhood. So that's that. And I guess kind of close out, was just a little Andy. Now, very little. Sometimes I would have on Sundays, I would have a wagon that I would pull with the Sunday paper because the Sunday paper was so big and heavy. And I would pull it. If the weather was really rainy or bad, sometimes my dad would drive me. And my dad had this, like, unbelievably rusted out Isuzu. It was turquoise blue. It was barely held together. And it was like a 4-cylinder engine. And my dad loved this car. And now as an adult, I can appreciate it. At the time, I was always humiliated because the car was like falling apart, backfiring, making all sorts of noise. I think it was an Isuzu. And it was like, looked like it got taken out of East Germany, dropped in a river, pulled back out, and then painted partially turquoise. But now I can see my dad was very, he didn't want to spend a lot of money. He was trying to save money and make do with these kids he had. So now I can respect it. At the time, my ego was like, oh, Dad, you're trying to, you know, crimp my game or something. You know, why can't you just have a sweet car? And now I see, now I'm just like my dad. I'm like, why would you have, I don't have a car. People are always like, why don't you have a car? And I said, well, I don't really need one. I said, it'd be pretty sweet if I did, but I can't really afford it. If I did have it, would I, So now, I mean, that's a life lesson I can appreciate now. Thank you, Dad. But so, yeah, I could be pulling my wagon or dropping off papers. You know, ideally, you'd put it in the mailbox, but most people like to have it delivered straight to their... Well, actually, a lot of people got it in their mailbox, which would save me time. But not everybody. A lot of people want it in their door, which I could understand as well, or inside their foyer. If they had a foyer or foyer, you know, they'd want it in there. Yeah, but that's it. That was a little... I thought this was going to be about delivering the newspaper, but I guess it was not. Thanks. All right, over on YouTube, I want to thank Rebecca R., Dan G., Pranked D., Hallie L., Trissy C., Sean D., our long-time YouTube listener, Sean D., Big Fish L., did not like the podcast. Barney G. Barney G didn't like it. Oh, no, back to back dislikes. Big Fish and Barney. But we followed up with Sean D. Second person to quote this quote, whatever you're doing with your blowhole, it looks insulting. And that's the point. I mean, that's the truth. I don't know. I wish I would have learned it from Drake, not getting into feuds with porpoises, but I didn't. Brian V. Holly S., thank you and good night. Oh No World, thank you and good night. Kathy M., thank you and good night. HD Man, thank you and good night. Aaron N., thank you and good night. And Gab's Love, thank you and good night. All right, over on Patreon, I want to thank our patrons, Claire D., Gisella, Jacqueline H., Ashley C., thank you and good night. Gary W., thank you and good night. Lisa E., thank you and good night. Emily P., thank you and good night. Miranda J., thank you and good night. Dallas J., thank you and good night. Anna S., thank you and good night. Debbie P., thank you and good night. Christine S., thank you and good night. Season H., thank you and good night. Tamira M., thank you and good night. Zach F., thank you and good night. Eric Z., buddy, thank you and good night. Thank you. Suzanne M., thank you and good night. I want to thank Neil with this. I think it's the Gaelic spelling of Neil. Neil. I think it's... I always want to say Neil, but this is Neil. Which, you know, I've been messing up names, you know, either way. Normal. Anyway, thank you and good night. Sue G., thank you and good night. Corey C., thank you and good night. Matt S., thank you and good night. Pam S., thank you and good night. Suzette M., thank you and good night. Kevin W., thank you and good night. Katie M., thank you and good night. Sky M., thank you and good night. Justin, thank you and good night. Dylan W., thank you and good night. ISO R., thank you and good night. Sarah G., thank you and good night. Trevor B., thank you and good night. Jen C., thank you and good night. Eileen M., thank you and good night. Alan, just Alan, thank you and good night. Jean L., thank you and good night. Heather R., thank you and good night. Susan T., thank you and good night. Isaac G., thank you and good night. Ross B., thank you and good night. Anna, thank you and good night. Kelly Z., thank you and good night. Jessica S., thank you and good night. All right, over on PayPal, I want to thank our donators. A. Grant, thank you very much. Brittany B., thank you very much. Kathy B., thank you very much. Andrew N., thank you so much and good night. Kathy S., thank you so much and good night. Steve P., thank you and good night. Allison H., thank you and good night. Amy G., thank you and good night. Enid G., thank you and good night. Kit K., thank you and good night. And William S., thank you and good night. And over on iTunes, I want to thank Christina F.H., who says, unusual concept that doesn't make any sense. 5 stars, though. And that's what seems to work. A narrator's voice is monotonous and rambling. Just the right speed for your brain to latch on. Thank you. And then Emrez 420, good old Emrez, It paid 420 in reses. That's a, like a reservoir. That's what we'd call it. Those probably go great together. Probably. So great. Four or five exclamation points. This podcast helped me get the best sleep in years. Scooter's entertaining, yet not. Soothing delivery. Disconnected stories. Just entertaining enough, but don't fully engage you. Greece is a safe place where you can drift off. Thank you, MRES. And that's it. Thank you and good night. Yeah, I want to say thank you to Florence. Thank you to, and good night to Lori. Thank you and good night to Spencer B. Be Like Babs, thank you and good night. Elias, thank you and good night. Gisella, thank you and good night. SPK, who loves the USA, thank you and good night. Amy Noel, yeah, that Hope of Destruction Protocol was activated, I think, the day I left the womb. Caroline, thank you and good night. Lori H, thank you. Laura H, thank you and good night. Harrison L, thank you and good night. Billy D, thank you and good night. Preston, thank you and good night. Illusionoid Podcast, thank you and good night. Dystopian, thank you and good night. Hoverboard Malaysia, thank you and good night. Carrie with a K, thank you and good night. Former librarian. Bugs, not funny, thank you and good night. Too bad about your neighbors. They sound terrible. Nikki H, thank you and good night. Brittany G, thank you and good night. Erica with a K, thank you and good night. Cameron M, thank you and good night. Laura, thank you and good night. Nikki R, thank you and good night. Evelyn H, thank you and good night. Vesna, thank you and good night. Chevy, thank you and good night. Chantel, thank you and good night. Nora N, thank you and good night. Mary, thank you and good night. Fiona, thank you and good night. Sherilyn, thank you and good night. Laura G, thank you and good night. Crystal, thank you and good night. Jillian, thank you and good night. Justin, thank you and good night. Anna, thank you and good night. Anya, thank you and good night. And that's it. Thank you and good night.